Frederick Carey.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. I'm an Agnew Craig.
Hey,
everybody. And thank you, Dan, for inviting me and giving me an opportunity to be of service today here with everyone at the convention. This is the second time I've been in Ocean City. I was here last year, and then I'm here this year, and last year was my first time that I've been back in about 10 years. And so it's been refreshing to see the change and how Narcotics Anonymous has grown. And so I really appreciate just that opportunity to be of service. Since I've been clean, what I have found out is to whom much is given, much is expected. And I've been given a lot of Narcotics Anonymous. I'm glad Dan made that announcement before I started speaking, because if people had gotten up while I was sharing, I might have taken that personally. So, you know, with all the people moving around and finding out that this was not the type of workshop they were expecting, that's fine. But I'm gonna step out on a limb here and make an assumption. I'm gonna suggest that if you're in this room today and you're clean because of what somebody else did for you. Amen. Now, whether that somebody is a treatment center, a prison, a judge, a husband, a wife, our children, whatever the case may be, somebody did things for me before I got here. And it's pretty cool for me to look out in the audience and see members from my home area in Raleigh, North Carolina, where I got clean, and members from my home area of where I live now in Frederick, Maryland. So it's kind of nice to have that. It's not something that I would have imagined on my journey, but it is kind of nice to see that. Today is, in speaking about relationships, today is one of my daughter's 12th birthday, and I have 6 children and 8 grandchildren, and I'm going to be a great-granddad in July. Yeah. I haven't put that on Facebook yet, so yeah. But I have, my oldest son is 38, and my youngest daughter is 10, and I have a 12-year-old whose birthday is today, and my oldest grandson is 19, and my youngest grandkids, I have twins, a boy and a girl, they will be 4 in June, and I've been clean over 26 years. And so, I know a few things about relationships. So I'm sure when people come, the other people come in expecting a different workshop, but it'll be fine. I was sitting here thinking back about when I got clean, not only when I got clean, but how I got clean. And that's why I started thinking about what someone else did for me, and believing that no one else is clean. Even back, you track back to the earliest days of our fellowship, and it was always one addict helping another. It was always someone doing this, doing that. We had, and I served on your world board for 12 years. I served as the chairperson of your world board. This is the first year since 1992 that I won't be in attendance at the World Service Conference. And I've been sad about that, because it's been such a big part of my life. When I first got involved with World Service, I had less than 5 years clean. And I left there with close to 25 years clean. And it's been such a big part of my life. And it actually changed my life and changed a lot of my perspectives, and it so very much enriched my recovery. And I'm saying World Service, but the key word there is service. Whether it's area, region, home group, opening the door for someone to come in, doing something for someone else without expecting too much in return, other than a thank you, because I do think it's important to say thank you to our members. And I was getting into a conversation with someone the other day about just saying thank you to people. Where did that get out of vogue, that people that serve us, that we can't say thank you? And saying thank you is not a merit badge. It's not a check. But it goes to the heart of just being human, common courtesy, and treating each other with respect and love. And I think it's a big part of our service being attractive to people. That we can and we do say thank you to people. One of my favorite passages in the works How and Why is about how we greet each other like survivors of a fatal catastrophe. Yeah. Well, it also should say how we treat each other. Not just greet each other, but how we treat each other like those survivors of that fatal catastrophe. And so all of those things were important to me in helping me get clean and stay clean. I got clean in 1987 in Raleigh, North Carolina. And the treatment center that I went to, they actually had to go out and buy a basic text because the counselor that I had didn't have basic text. He had books from another organization other than ours. The lady who was the employee assistance program director for my job, I've been with the same company now for 33 years. They went out and gathered information about Narcotics Anonymous for me. I was her first client that wanted to go to NA. So she came to one of our meetings when this is 1987. So yeah, I can talk in the dark too. I've been doing it for years. I can whisper it. Don't let me divert. Okay, but anyway, she came to a Narcotics Anonymous meeting with me in 1987, and it's 1987 Narcotics Anonymous. So you know, you can imagine how things were. And she was like, oh no, this can't work for you. This won't work for you. Because she didn't have history. She didn't have familiarity with our program. She had history with another organization. And so, but when she saw me staying clean as a result of those people in Raleigh taking me under their wing, people that didn't look like me, that weren't my same skin color, in 1987 in the NA community that I got clean in, took me up under their wing. And she saw that, and she saw me staying clean, and she became an advocate and a big supporter of our program because she saw it work. And so our public relations, Dan talked about it being sustainable, it being long-standing. When you think of any relationship, or when I think of a relationship, the key thing in any relationship that I've been in, whether it's my children, whether it's my grandchildren, whether it's my sponsees, friends that I've had through the years, the most critical thing in that relationship is communication. Two-way communication. Not one-way. Meeting each other's needs. No, but before I can meet the needs, I need to know what the needs are. Knowing what the wants are. Not having unrealistic expectations. Because I do believe in having expectations in a relationship. I know the woman that I'm involved with has some expectations of me. And I told her, so have them. It's okay. As long as they're not unrealistic. Right? And that you tell me what they are and give me an opportunity to meet them. The same thing applies to our relationship as a fellowship with the public. believe it or not, every one of us have been doing PR work the whole time we've been here. Think about it. Everybody in this convention center is not one of us. Everybody in here is not a member. Let me give you some personal examples. I had a class in Philadelphia, and I have to give a shout. I saw some people back here from Philly. I lived in Philadelphia for 2,290 days between North Carolina and Frederick. So I had a class in Philadelphia this week, and I happened to be at the same hotel that I stayed in for the World Convention. And the lady said, "You look familiar." And she helped me with an issue I had with my room. And I said, "Yeah," I told her, blah, blah, blah. And she said, "There have been 5 or 6 conventions at our hotel since August. But you know what? I remember y'all." I didn't bother to ask whether that was positive or negative. I took it as a positive because I'm a positive thinking kind of guy. So I took that as a positive. But she said, "I remember y'all." And so my point being is that as a member and walking around at a hotel, at a convention center, I can either paint a positive or negative picture of our fellowship just by the way I carry myself and the way that I treat other people. And I'm not saying any of us are angels or anything like that. What I'm saying, though, is that we do get better and we do recover. And there's nothing wrong with getting better. Another example I have is there was a meeting in Raleigh, one of the earlier meetings, that was at a facility, and that to get into the facility you had to come down a one-way street and take a left into the parking lot. And it was like a little strip mall area, county area, had a cab stand, a taxi cab stand for those who don't know. I'm from the South. A cab stand. And, you know, people milling around. And so members would come out of that group. And when you come out of the parking lot, if you're following established rules of the road and the laws, it's a one-way street, which means you have to turn left. So, of course, some of our members turned right because it was quicker to turn right to get back to the other street. And so we're standing there, and they just, you know, just real nonchalantly did that. So I'm standing there, me and another guy, and we're listening to the people that work in that facility standing on the handrail watching our members. And this is what they said. "Them damn drug people. They just can't do anything right." Because you're actually, it sounded very innocent. But there's a reason why they have rules. There's a reason why it's a one-way street. There's a reason why it's in our best interest to follow those rules. And so what it did was it cast a negative impression about who we were as a fellowship. And here's why that's so important to me as an NA member. Because that very person that's watching us, I know you all of you have heard, I might be the only copy of the basic text that someone reads just by the way I carry myself. That person watching me could be the very person to either defer or not recommend our program to somebody. And it's important because that person that's on their way to Narcotics Anonymous, there's somebody out here within a mile or two of this convention center that's on their way to Narcotics Anonymous. They just don't know it yet. And so the way we carry ourselves this weekend with the staff here at the convention center, the people that we meet with, could very well be someone to recommend our program to somebody. That somebody that I'm talking about, think about it. Think about your own recovery for a second and how much NA has changed your life. this could be a life-changing experience for that person. And any time that a person is either delayed, inhibited, or interrupted from coming to our program might be the very thing that killed that person. And so that's the way I start thinking about things. Our interactions with the public, whether it's focused, those sustainable, reliable relationships that I'm talking about are important. I was on the board when we put together the public relations handbook. The reason why that we wanted to put together a book that encompasses all of our public relations efforts is to have it in one place. This is what public relations can mean to you as an NA member. How many of you have a home group? So there's a relationship that's been built with that home group, with that facility that your home group meets in. That's public relations. Someone having that relationship with the facility. Us leaving the facility in a better place than when we found it. Not tearing the joint up just because we can. I'm a big believer in just because I can doesn't mean that I should. Everything permissible is not beneficial. And so keeping in mind that we want to meet at that facility, because here is one of the important things about that. Personal recovery depends on NA unity. And our common welfare comes first. And so me as that NA member, the best way for me to honor all those people that helped me get clean and stay clean, that family that I told you guys about, Narcotics Anonymous not only changed my life, it changed my family's future. It literally changed my family's future. Because they have someone reliable and someone affectionate and someone affirming in their life. Their granddad. Their dad. And someone who can be there for them. I got that from y'all. And so it's always in my best interest to give that back to people. And so the workshop today is I'm not going to go into a whole lot of details, but I do know that the workshop today is going to be interesting enough that, you know, people can talk about what anonymity means. What it means, we have six traditions that encompass our public relations policy. Not one, we have six. The third tradition that outlines there is no requirement for membership other than a desire. That we do have an objective. We do have a primary purpose, and the reason it's called primary is because there is no secondary. There is nothing no more important than that. That's why we go out to those facilities. That's why we meet with those people. Not because of me, it's because of Narcotics Anonymous. We're not affiliated with those folks. We love that they let us in. We cooperate with them. But we don't affiliate with them because some of the things that they stand for might be in contrast to our own principles. And we don't want to tie ourselves to any other organizations. We not only want to be free to conduct our meetings the way that we see fit, but we want to have freedom to carry the message the way that we see fit, the way that we know how, because the therapeutic value is unparalleled. And we want to make sure people know about us. If we don't tell people about us, if we leave it up to other people, they're either uninformed or SOL. Either way, they're in bad shape. We're non-professional in our own approach to how we conduct our meetings, to how we relate to each other. Yeah, we have people with different acronyms behind their names, and we all have different careers, and we all do different things. But when it comes to that therapeutic value and my ability to help another addict and to my ability to be helped by one of you guys, those kind of things are secondary. they're not as important as the fact that when I came to NA and no one looked like me and no one was my skin color, this is what I hooked into. They felt like I felt. When I talked about feeling unworthy, unloved, less than, unattractive, just not worthy, those folks understood that. When I talked about losing my driver's license 7 times, they understood that. They laughed like y'all laughing, because some of y'all have probably lost your license a few times. Not because you couldn't drive, you were like me, because I had a car and I could do what I wanted to. Kind of attitude. Entitlement. We don't have an opinion as a fellowship. I certainly have some opinions about some things. I have some experience. My opinions might be different, and I'm sure some of the things that I'm sharing up here today are not of your experience, or you might have a different perspective and you might have a different opinion. And I do believe that this is just my experience and not yours, and I respect yours, but I also have the courage of my own conviction. But I know when I'm in public, and this is the public, that I need to say that this is not the expressed opinion of Narcotics Anonymous, but it's mine, and it's my perspective. And the dreams and visions and things that I have and how Narcotics Anonymous has worked in my life. And we do have limits to our anonymity, whether it's in the media or whether it's in public. Let me give you these last two stories and then I'm finished. I met with, when I was first elected to the World Board, we went through a 6-7 month project with the Federal Bureau of Prisons. I came back and forth to Washington, D.C. They had members of Alcoholics Anonymous from their board, and I was sent here as a representative from our World Board, me and another special worker from the World Service Office, and we represented y'all with the Federal Bureau of Prisons. And they wanted to put together a panel of 12-step programs, and they wanted to simulcast that to all of the prisons across the United States. It took us about 6 or 7 months to do. And so the guys from another organization, they wanted to be videotaped in the shadows. You know, you had those, you've seen the shows where they're talking to the, someone who's undercover, incognito or whatever. Solo-ed. And they asked us if we want that. And I said, no, we're not a secret organization. I'm not undercover. I'm not incognito. I'm not in the witness protection program. And they knew my full name. They knew my full name. Because I was not there as an addict. I was there as a trusted servant from the board of directors of Narcotics Anonymous. And that's how I conducted myself through that whole experience. At our world conventions, we've done media interviews with local media for Narcotics Anonymous. Not as a recovering addict, but as a member of a trusted servant there. I'm not sharing personal information about who I am and my recovery and I've been clean. What I'm sharing about is our program. Our program. The value of our program. How people today can come to Narcotics Anonymous. How we're in 101 countries. We speak 65 languages. We're North, South, East, West, North America, South America, Latin America. We're Middle East. We're Far East. We're Russia. We're Asia. We're Europe. We're Eurasia. We're down under. We're up top. We're inside. We're outside. We're men, women, black, white, young, old, HIV positive, HIV negative. You name it. That's who we are. Not only that, we stay clean. And we do recover.
Yes, yes.
And we want to be seen as a credible organization. And we are. And each one of us as a member has a stake in that. Because you never know when one of your family members, you never ever know when one of your family members might need our program. And we want to make sure they have a place to come and that they know they can come here. We're reliable, we're credible, and not only that, our program works. So thank y'all for listening.
Thanks, Craig. And thanks, everyone, for being here. I just want to say a few things.